actually going to be the end of my show today. I hope you enjoyed it. This is DJ Lotto, and you're listening to Mind's Eye. And up next, we have
Books and Ideas
by
DJ
Safikar. So I hope you enjoy that. I'm actually really excited for it, so stay tuned. Do you want to?
Okay. Good afternoon. This is KDVS 90.3 FM. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I'm DJ Safikar. We are broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, inhabited by Patwin Native Americans. Today, we're looking at the sound of a wild snail eating, the earthly adventures of a woman and a gastropod by Elizabeth Tova Bailey, first published at 210. This is a very beautiful and incredible book at many levels. It has won many awards. It is about 1 year in the life of the author Elizabeth Tova Bailey when she becomes bedridden from an illness unknown, and how she is able to find meaning and strength through companionship with a wild snail, despite the many hardships she faces. The snail triggers her sense of wonder. The book is about the rewards of closely observing nature. It shows that anything can be the subject of our intellectual curiosity. It is about how zooming in and focusing on small part of natural world can illuminate our own human existence. The title sets the tone for the book. It's tongue-in-cheek. It brings to mind someone who eats loudly, chewing and slurping. This can be funny or irritating. The idea of a snail being wild is also unclear. I mean, are there any domesticated or tamed snails? How is it wild? Is it uncultivated and uncultured? Is the snail an out-of-control party animal? Is it one with nature? I'm not sure what wild means here. Bailey calls her snail a true mentor. Like a wise professor, the wild snail, without wanting to or even knowing, gives Elizabeth a greater understanding of life and her own place in the world and brings her out of darkness of depression and into the light. The snail really saves her life and improves her spirits substantially. In the prologue, Bailey explains how she came to be sick at age 34 on a brief trip to a small village in northern Italy. She was stricken by a mysterious viral and bacterial pathogen, resulting in severe neurological symptoms upon her return home. After 10 days of fever and a pounding headache, emergency room visits and lab tests, Elizabeth was sicker than she had ever been. She convinced herself doctors would know how to fix her, but they struggled to even identify what was happening to her. She was so weak that all she could do was just breathe and keep breathing. Yet she was so afraid that if she goes to sleep, she may never wake up again. Paralyzed and unable to care for herself at home, Elizabeth moves into a carer's studio apartment where she can receive the care she needs. Her own 1830s farmhouse, some 50 miles away in the woods, is shuttered, leading her to doubt if she would ever make it home again. The book is divided into 6 parts, and each part has 3 or 4 chapters. The part 1 is entitled The Violet Pot Adventures. Chapter 1 is called Field Violets. In the early spring, a friend of Elizabeth, who's visiting, goes for a walk in the woods and brings back a wild snail in a pot of field violets. At first, Elizabeth is a bit taken back. Why would her friend think she might be interested in a snail? She wonders, What on earth would I do with it? I couldn't get out of the bed to return it to the woods. It was not much of an interest, and if it was alive, the responsibility, especially for a snail, something so uncalled for, was overwhelming for her. She likes and appreciates the violets because she could water them with her drinking glass. But what about the snail? She writes it had been going about its day when it was picked up. What right did my friend and I have to disrupt its life? Though I can't imagine what kind of life a snail might lead. For the rest of the day, the snail stays inside its shell, and Elizabeth is too worn out from her friend's visit to give it another thought. In this book, there are two protagonists. One is a human being, and the other an unremarkable wild snail. And truly, you shall see by the end, when it comes to abilities, strength, and resourcefulness, and complexity, neither is less than the other. Note that dinosaurs disappeared after an extinction event 65 million years ago. The snails have remained the same for 500 million years. They have made it through a number of radical changes in the environment. They are so able and perfect just as they are that nature and the evolution have not deemed it necessary to make any changes to them for half a billion years. The book begins with Elizabeth's observation of the snail. As Bailey becomes increasingly more curious, she goes to science to find out more, anything and everything she can. She also consults poets, writers of memoir, natural history, and children's stories. She probes, for instance, how and what they eat, how they get around, and their sexuality and reproduction. What she finds is truly astonishing. Sometimes we think that we know the familiar things sufficiently, but if we pause and look at them closer, we may find out that we almost know nothing about them, and what we know is only superficial. The book mixes various genres effortlessly. It is an illness memoir mixed with biology, nature writing, art, and environmentalism. It is about our innate affinity for other beings, even for those animals that are very distantly related to us. It's also about survival and resilience. Chapter 2, Discovery. Around dinner time, Elizabeth is surprised to see that the snail is awake. She watches from her bed as it moves slowly down, gliding along, exploring the side of the pot and the dish beneath. She finds its leisurely pace mesmerizing. She wonders whether the snail might wander off in the night, causing her snail problem to simply vanish. But when she wakes up the next morning, the snail is back, up in the pot, tucked into its shell, in deep sleep beneath a violet on her crate the night before. But now she notices a mysterious square hole just below the return address. This is baffling to her. What could a hole, much less a square hole, how could a hole, much less a square hole, appear in an envelope overnight? Okay. Then she thought of the snail and its evening activities. Snails are clearly nocturnal. She muses, it must have some kind of teeth, and it wasn't shy about using them. Prior to her illness, Elizabeth's life has been full of activity, filled with friends, families, and work, the pleasures of gardening, hiking, and sailing, and the familiar humdrum of daily routines, making breakfast, exploring the woods, going to work, reading a book, getting up to get something. Yet now simply getting up to get something, anything like that alone, would be an accomplishment. From where she lay, all life was out of reach. As the months pass, it is hard for Elizabeth to remember why the endless detail of a healthy life and a good job had seemed so critical and so important once. It was odd for her to see her friends overwhelmed by their busy lives when they could easily do all the things she could do without a second thought. What she means here is that illness affects our desires and their intensity. I have a chronic backache. It goes and comes back. I just had a very painful bout of it this past week. The night before, I was telling my wife that it would be nice if we could go see a film in a tower. But after a few days of excruciating pain, I was thinking to myself how wonderful and super it would be if I could just do the ordinary things that I do without so much pain. On the second morning of the snail's stay, Bailey finds another square hole, this time in a list she was keeping on a scrap of paper. It dawns on her that perhaps the snail needed some real food. Okay. It dawned on her that, okay. Letters and envelopes weren't probably not its typical diet. She has a few withered flowers in a vase near her bed, so she puts some of the blossoms in a dish beneath the pot of violets. The snail awakens and makes its way down the side of the pot and investigates the offering with great interest. It then begins to eat one of the blossoms, and a petal starts to disappear at a barely discernible rate. Elizabeth writes, "I listened carefully. I could hear it eating. The sound was of someone, very small, munching celery continuously. I watched, transfixed, as over the course of an hour, the snail meticulously ate an entire purple petal for dinner." Elizabeth finds that the tiny, intimate sound of the snail eating gives her a distinct feeling of companionship and shared space. It also makes her happy that she could recycle the withered flowers by her bed to sustain a small creature in need. While Elizabeth is grateful for the care she is receiving in her carer's home, she feels out of place and strange. It was hard enough that my body was in a bizarre and bewildering place, but I was homesick as well. I was far from the things that delighted me, the wild woods that sustained me, and the social network that enriched me. She is missing all of that and more. For several weeks, the snail lives in the flower pot, just inches from Bailey's bed, sleeping beneath the violet leaves by day and exploring at night. Each morning while she is having breakfast, it climbs back into the pot to sleep in the little hollow it had made in the dirt. Even though the snail usually sleeps through the days, Bailey finds it comforting to glance toward the violets and see the snail's small circular shape tucked under a leaf. Confined to her bed, Elizabeth begins to follow the adventures of the snail more intensely. She writes, "Each evening, the snail awoke, and with astonishing poise, it moved gracefully to the rim of the pot and peered over, surveying, once again, the strange country that lay ahead, pondering its circumstances with a regal air, as if from the turret of a castle. It waved its tentacle first this way and then that, as though responding to a distant melody." Chapter 3, Exploration. Bailey's illness made sleeping at night difficult, and sometimes impossible. She writes, "When I woke during the night, I would listen intently. Sometimes the silence was complete, but at other times I could hear the comforting sound of a snail's minuscule munching. She would use her flashlight to search out and find its small shape to see what it was eating and to see which flowers it preferred. The snail usually stayed within a few feet of the flower pot, which sat on a crate that she was using as a bedside table. Every few days, she watered the violet with her drinking glass, and the excess water seeped into the dish beneath. She noticed this always awoke the snail. It would glide to the rim of the pot and look over slowly, waving its tentacles in apparent delight, before making its way down to the dish for a drink. Elizabeth soon becomes concerned that she's not taking good enough care of her companion. She asks her carer to get a little bit more dirt for the roots around the violets. Her caregiver gets some soil from the vegetable garden, but the snail is not pleased. For the next few days, she writes, "It carefully crept up the side of the pot, directly onto the violet leaf, never touching the garden soil. I had to ask for help. Her carer exchanged the sandy garden soil with humus from the snail's own woods. That's a soil that has microorganisms in it, like leaves, dead leaves. And soon the snail was sleeping beneath the violet leaves again. As the weeks passed, Elizabeth notices the snail's nighttime forays are becoming more adventurous. The flowers she's offering are clearly also not enough to satisfy its appetite. She tells that one night it ate part of a label of a vitamin C bottle. Another night, it climbed up a pastel drawing made by a friend and ate some of the green border. And one morning, she awoke to find a hole in the padded envelope for mailing books. After being transported from the woods, Bailey writes, "The snail emerged from its shell into the alien territory of my room. With no clue as to where it was and how it had arrived, the lack of vegetation and desert-like surrounding must have seemed strange." She begins to relate to the snail, writing, "The snail and I were both living in an altered landscape, not of our choosing. I figure we shared a sense of loss and displacement." Recounting her experience, Elizabeth describes how, in the morning, often before she's fully awake, her body fully conscious, she always has the hope that her illness will have vanished with the night and that her health will have been magically returned. But these moments soon pass and reality comes flooding back and nothing has changed. But then, she thinks of the snail and begins searching for it, tucked back under the violet leaf. Bailey finds that the snail's daytime habits give her a fresh perspective on her own condition. While others are busy with their lives, she's not the only one resting away the days. The snail naturally sleeps by the day, even on the sunniest of the afternoons. She finds the snail's companionship a comfort, buffering her feelings of uselessness. Bailey writes, "After weeks of round-the-clock companionship, there was no doubt about the relationship. The snail and I were officially cohabitating. I was, I admit, attached. I felt some guilt that he had been taken and asked from his natural habitat, yet I was not ready to part with it. It was adding a welcome focus to my life. I couldn't think how I would otherwise have passed the hours." Despite the snail's small size, Elizabeth soon realizes that it clearly has preferences. She notices it seems to have a particular interest in anything the color of rich, dark soil. It is also equally attracted to white things such as paper. She becomes committed to finding out more about her companion. Part 2, The Green Kingdom. Chapter 4, The Forest Floor. As the snail becomes more accustomed to its surrounding, its explorations become more extensive. Bailey speculates that perhaps it's trying to find a trail back to its original woods, or hoping to find better food. However, she points out it instinctively knew its limits and how far it could travel during the night and still return home in the morning. On the dry surface of the crate, the violets offered an oasis with water, food, and shelter. Setting off on an expedition, Bailey writes, the snail would stretch its tentacles out in anticipation, appearing confident about where it was going. Watching it glide along is a welcome distraction for Bailey and provides a sort of meditation. She admits, Often her frantic and frustrated thoughts would gradually settle down to match its calm, smooth pace. With its mysterious, fluid movement, it was as if the snail was the quintessential Tai Chi master. While the flower pot had worked for a while, Bailey wants to make arrangements for the snail to have a safer and more natural home. Her caregiver finds an empty rectangular glass aquarium in the barn where she was staying, so this is soon converted into a roomy terrarium filled with fresh native plants and other materials from the snail's own woods. For Elizabeth, the fresh terrarium by her bedside is lovely. It offers a garden and growing ecosystem that provides a magnificent backdrop for the humble brown snail. The terrarium also offers a more comfortable and natural world than the flower pot. The snail is safe in the terrarium and will not be able to get lost. It's even safer than the wild, since there are no predators hiding behind a leaf or sweeping down from the sky. As Bailey's snail watching continues, she wants to know more about how to care properly for her snail companion. Her caregiver finds an old paper book entitled Odd Pets by Dorothy Hogner. In addition to providing basic information on snails, Hogner suggests feeding them a diet of mushrooms. Okay, let's see. There were some fresh portobellos in her carer's kitchen refrigerator, and since a single portobello mushroom is about 15 times larger than her snail, Elizabeth's caregiver cuts a generous slice and places it in the terrarium. The snail loves the mushrooms. It is so happy to have familiar food after weeks of nothing but wilted flowers. That for several days it sleeps right next to the huge piece of portobello, waking throughout the day to reach out and take a nibble before sinking back into the well-fed slumber. Each night, a large portion of the mushroom would vanish until by the end of the week, the very last piece disappeared. It consumed one portobello mushroom in a week. Next chapter, chapter 5, is called Life in Microcosm. Now that her snail was in a more comfortable environment, Bailey was able to watch it even more closely. She writes, "Half the fun of having the snail as a companion was that it kept finding new sleeping places. So there was an ongoing game of hide and seek. In the terrarium, it would blend so well into the woodland plants that she had to sleuth out its latest hiding spot. If the day was rainy and cloudy outside, then the snail awoke and was active. She was amazed at how far and fast it would move. The creature also seemed to defy physics." She admits that during this period of her life, holding and reading a book for any length of time involved levels of strength and concentration that were beyond her. But she found watching the snail was completely relaxing. She writes, "I observed without thinking, looking into the terrarium simply to feel connected to another creature. Another life was being lived just a few inches away." She finds that they both liked adventure, but her own adventures were far more challenging. After weeks of never leaving the bed in her room where she stayed, a doctor's trip was a monumental undertaking. She had to travel horizontally. The most satisfying part of her adventure was when her driver had errands to run, she could lie in the back of the car in the parking lot and watch as others bustled about their business. This brought her a sense of connection and contentment, yet it was also a striking reminder of how entirely cut off she was from the most basic activities of life. All right. I believe that's going to be it for today. Let me see if I can find a song for you. Right? This song is by William Shatner. and it's from an album called Build, released 3 years ago. Okay.
When we met, you were young, your spirit wild and unbound. A great stallion, black coat like fine Paris jet. A noble arrogance I couldn't resist. I felt a need to possess you like a jealous lover, to keep you away from others. And once you were mine, you became a great champion in world record time. Then, a fateful decision to make you a stud. Your seed and your blood was worth more than gold, and it seemed smart and easy to continue your line. You were put in a stall like a hothouse flower, led in and out, and watched every hour, and milked for your seed like a cow. Yet I didn't understand until now. Love made me blind to your sadness and deaf to your madness. Your dreams to be free and your passion to run. What have I done? What have I done? What have I done? Your instincts fought back. You kicked and you bucked and you snorted with rage. The hands came to hate you almost as much as you hated them, but not that truly or deeply. So chains were employed to clamp you inside, a muzzle to stop you from biting your hide, your legs bandaged and bound so now even your coat, skin, and hoofs couldn't breathe. That's when the madness really took hold. The only thing growing was your anger, and with it, the danger to all in your way. So most stayed away. Now, the picture of you once healthy and wild had become an inversion and something depraved. Where once was a royal, now stood a slave. Love made me blind to your sadness and deaf to your madness, your dreams to be free and your passion to run. What have I done? What have I done? What have I done? Eventually, you could barely be touched. Your life, an endless battle that you could never win. Kept away from the light, days, weeks, and months of one long, endless night. And with the mercy of age, you grew old and sick until the time had come I brought you to pasture for a final walk. I stood beside you as you basked in the sun, but in the distance, you spied other horses, young bucks, running wild on the hill, and I felt a tremor. The years fell away, a spark lit your eyes, and somehow the strength of youth filled your muscles again. You reared up on your hind legs and gave a thunderous cry. The other horses heard you, turned, and then scattered in awe of your power, still mighty and clear, savage and noble, for one last moment of glory. Love made me blind to your sadness and deaf to your madness. Your dreams to be free of your passion to run. What have I done? What have I done? What have I done? The vet came for the end, carrying his bag and his pity. With just moments to live, I looked in your eyes. I wanted forgiveness or something, anything. But I found no answers, and none were deserved. I touched your muscle, mane, withers, and back. Then, one quick injection, and all faded to black. Your body crumbled instantly, the life force gone quicker than breath blends with the sky. Light gone from your eye, and we buried you there in a grave we had dug. Does your spirit live on? Where did the energy go? The life force you had, that I'll never forget. Though I'll spend all my days cursed and filled with regret. Love made me blind to your sadness and deaf to your madness. Your dreams to be free and your passion to run. What have I done? What have I done?
You're listening to Katagus Davis, 90.3 FM. The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Up next, Smile Show, after these messages.
Aw, you know kids will be kids.
Oh, I don't know why they're trying to make a big deal of it. It's just a harmless rite of passage.
If she didn't want to be picked on, she shouldn't wear that thing on her head.
If he's going to dress that way, he's just asking for the extra attention.
It's just a stage. All kids face some bullying. They'll get over it.
That girl, she just brings it on herself. I don't feel bad for her at all.
It's just a stage.
It's just a harmless rite of passage.
All students in California deserve a safe learning environment without the threat of bullying. I'm David Goldberg, Secretary Treasurer of the California Teachers Association. It's up to us as educators, as parents, as adults, to stand up on behalf of bullied students. Identify, intervene, and advocate. One caring adult can make all the difference.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree, a message from the California Teachers Association.
In just 30 seconds, we will return you to
KDVS.
Meanwhile, a memo on a matter of importance to you and your family. Did you know that nearly a third of all motor accident victims are killed in collisions between motor vehicles and pedestrians? Just because the road looks smooth, clear, and flat in front of you, don't put your foot down on the accelerator. A child may ride a bicycle out of a side road. A young couple may step off the curb, and death strikes suddenly. Drive carefully. Drive with your mind as well as your body.
Ten-minute bouts of physical activity at a moderate or vigorous intensity three times a day on most days of the week will give you enough activity to enjoy health benefits such as having more energy, sleeping better, and reducing the risk of heart disease and stroke. Try walking or biking, having your own dance party as a quick study or work break, or getting outside to throw a flying disc with a friend. For more information, visit cdc.gov/physical activity.
Well-being, empowerment. Welcome to this week's edition of the Smiles Show and Podcast Smiles. Join our host, Jimmy Smiles, as we connect virtually. And now, here's Jimmy.
And welcome to everybody. Welcome to UC Davis. Welcome to Davis. This is the Smiles Show annual Welcome to Davis. Welcome to UC Davis edition.